Ron Ananian.
A car, it gets to be a critical issue of safety. You don't know where you'll be when that breaks.
The Car Doctor.
I think four-wheel drive as a rule across the manufacturers that are out there today, I think it's easier to maintain and cheaper on the pocketbook.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I was reading a recent copy of Generator and Distributor because what else would a mechanic read in his off hours? I mean, it's not, you know, we're not reading novels. And Generator and Distributor is the national magazine for the Vintage Chevrolet Car Club Association. I think it's the VCC something or other. Let me get the correct nomenclature. The Vintage Chevrolet Club of America. And it's really neat, right? It's all old Chevrolets. The only thing I don't like about the magazine is if you become a member, they list your name, address, and what your car is. And I keep saying that's the dumbest thing I ever saw, because in this day of internet information, everybody can go and find out what car you got and then come and rob it. But that's just, I'm from Jersey. I'm suspicious of everybody, you know. Around here, we think Sopranos are home movies. So I'm reading the article on the 55 Chevys, obviously, with the interest that I have for them. And the article starts out, 1955, a gallon of gas was 29 cents a gallon, a first-class postage stamp was 3 cents, and the Brooklyn Dodgers defeated the Yankees in the World Series, and on the waterfront was almost a sweeping movie in the Academy Awards by winning Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Director, and Gunsmoke made its debut on CBS. You know how long ago that was? But watch the numbers, okay? General Motors, and I just had to read this because I was curious how many 55 Chevys were ever made, and I never really knew the number. I had heard it was, you know, this million and a half cars, but their number, they made 1,736,723 55 Chevrolets in 1955. That's crazy. That's a little under 2 million cars at a time when, you know, to have one car was unheard of. To have two was preposterous, right? And now people have two and three and four cars. How many people have more than one car? I think it's an oddity if somebody only has one car. And I just, you know, you look at how the automobile industry has transformed the country and made it. It's not just about transportation. It's a mark on culture. And I look back like this because I look back at this because I keep looking forward. And I keep thinking about the electric vehicle. There was an article online this week, Rivian electric truck. And I've got Tom working on it. We want to try and interview somebody and talk to them. And they've come out with an electric truck that has a motor at each wheel, and they can spin the thing like a tank. It works independently. And you think about the cultural mark that that will leave on society if it works, right? And yet the 55 Chevys are still here. And it was so simple. It was, you know, gas was under 30 cents a gallon. A postage stamp was 3 cents. We knew who the good guys were. We knew who the bad guys were. We still didn't trust politicians. Although I guess we did. Eisenhower was president in the 50s, right? We forget he won the war. He was safe to elect to the White House. Just neat stuff. Just, you know, that's the problem with looking back, that you look back and you think, how did we ever get here? But, you know, just something to think about. And I think about electric vehicles and what they're going to do. It's going to be an interesting time. So we can talk about that a little bit later. Hello and welcome, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We are here. By the way, I haven't talked about it in a while. I should mention cardoctorshow.com if you're looking for the website. And also, we have a Facebook page, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, that's there for you to comment and send us your thoughts and, you know, whatever it is that cranks your fancy, as we like to say around here on the Car Doctor. Let's get over to Jack in West Virginia, 97 Ford Escort. And some airbag issues. Jack, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help? Jack? Oh, yes, sir.
I had a horn issue a few months ago. The horn got stuck, and the mechanic had to put a part inside where the airbag is.
A clock spring?
And, excuse me?
The clock spring, maybe?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what he did. I know he removed the airbag and had to put this piece inside the,
okay,
where the steering wheel is, where you hit the horn.
Right.
To unstick it or whatever. And ever since then, I've had the airbag light flashing.
Okay.
And I went back to him, and he said, well, he said, it'll have to be reset by the manufacturer, but it's okay. It'll still work.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true, or is that not, or what can I do?
Is this your regular mechanic, Jack?
Well, it's a local mechanic. It's not a dealership.
Okay. So
is a regular mechanic.
Is this like your guy that you go to on a regular basis?
Yes, sir.
Do you trust this guy?
Yeah, pretty much.
Then ask
him. I think. I don't know.
Well, because I got to tell you, if bologna's $1.59 a pound, I hope you enjoy your sandwich, because I think that's what he's giving you. If the airbag light's on, brother, if the airbag light is on, the airbag system does not work.
Well, it's right? Blinking.
And whether it's blinking on, if it's illuminated, it's not working. So he needs, you don't necessarily need to go to the dealer. You need to go to a competent repair shop, whether it's a dealer or an independent, that's got the correct tooling and the scan tool with the ability to read that system and disseminate just what's going on. It's probably going to be a fault somewhere related to the clock spring airbag circuit up top there. If it wasn't there before, then, you know, that's where you're headed. But the real question is, and I think your question for him is, listen, I've been coming to you. How long have you been going to this guy?
Several years.
Right.
5, 10 years.
You know, it's and whether it's 5 or 10, regardless, it's more than 2 months. And, you know, listen, you've been my guy. I've come to you for everything. I've brought my family here. I've brought my friends here. I mean, do you really think this is the proper way for a repair to end? And I think you got to put it back on him. Look, repairs go bad. Everybody has a bad day. You know what? We're all going to be perfect when we're dead. Trust me. We're not going to make any mistakes. But,
right. You
know, the most important thing is we got to live up to it while we're here. And he's got to sit there and say, hey, you know what? That repair didn't come out exactly right. And if he's going to be professional about it, if he's going to be responsible about it, he owes you an explanation. And, you know, whether it's related to what he did or whether it's coincidence, and I'm not trying to put the finger on him or anybody else, I just...
Right.
You know, it's just a lousy way to end it.
Well, somebody told me that if you don't take the battery, unplug it or something like that.
Well, airbag faults because of safety will generally be hard written into processors. Some cars do, some don't. I don't try to remember. I try to do it the right way using a scan tool. If I were to take an airbag apart, and I'm sure somewhere in my career I've taken an airbag apart, and I forgot to disconnect something, but I doubt it. Airbags kind of scare me a little bit because it's like a shotgun. When they go off so fast. But for conversation's sake, maybe I turned the key to the on position before I connected the bag, and it would have created an open short failure, an open circuit fault in the circuit. I'd have to use a scan tool to clear it, is my point. Mm-hmm. But once I cleared it, if the fault didn't exist, the light would stay out. If that light is lit and clearing it doesn't cause it to go out, then that vehicle's got a fault and it's related to something he assembled wrong. So, okay. Listen.
Now, can a regular scan tool reset this?
Probably
not.
No, sir. So when I say scan tool, scan tools speak a variety of languages, all right? My mother spoke Armenian and English, all right? English when things were good, Armenian when Ronnie did something wrong, all right? I usually learned a lot of bad words in Armenian working on cars, but usually they came from my mother. Look, Ma, I left a mark in the driveway. Okay, relax, I'll fix it. You know, so scan tools are sort of the same way. A scan tool will speak manufacturer-specific language. It'll go into the engine controller. It'll go into the body controller. It'll go into the ABS and the airbag controller and so on. And by federal law, it will also speak OBD2, which is just emissions-related information. All right?
Okay.
Now, It's not required to do that. Some manufacturers do, some don't. You know, it's just it's a matter of what tool it is, and you know how much it is, and how much engineering is in it, and so forth. So if you have a $150-$200 scan tool that only does OBD2, no, you won't be able to get into the airbag system. But right. If you have one that speaks year, make, model specific language, if it speaks Armenian,
no, I don't have it.
Yeah, if it speaks Armenian, then you can get into the airbag and look. But okay. the bigger issue, Jack, I got to tell you, the bigger issue is, why isn't this guy fixing this thing?
I don't know, unless he doesn't have the scanner thing to do it with.
And that's okay. You know what? You would take that as an answer, right?
Yeah, if it ain't working, you know.
Yeah,
send me someplace that will fix it or whatever.
Right. Let's not lose the relationship, and that's what it's about, and that's what auto repair is. Listen.
All right.
Monday morning, here's the answer, all right? Is the guy working Monday?
Sure.
Monday morning, stop by with 2 cups of coffee and 6 donuts. Sit down and talk to the guy, all right? Make nice,
okay.
All right? Make nice. Try to relate to him on a one-to-one and say, listen, if you can't fix it, I get it. But, you know, now he may throw you out. He may not know what to do with this. People are kind of weird when people treat him nice. It's an interesting phenomenon to watch. It's what I always say, auto repair is a study in human emotion on both sides of the counter. But see what he says and call me back. Let me know next week.
Okay.
All right, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. Happy New Year. Take good care. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this.
It's the Pasadena.
He drives that way, but when it comes to fixing cars, Ron has car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
You know, I'm still reading Generator and Distributor, and it's kind of interesting. Before I go back to the phones, so I'm saying with its exciting redesigned body by Fisher, the 1955 Chevrolet presented a new 12-volt electrical system. 12 volt. Wow. A choice of 7 new power options, including the new Plus Power Package, 180 horsepower small block V8, and exciting options. You ready for this? What kind of options we had in a 1955 Chevrolet? Air conditioning. That was an option. I don't think you could find a car today without air conditioning, right? Self-de-icing wiper blades. I don't know what that is. I'd have to look that one up. That's got to be maybe some kind of scraper. A vacuum-powered ashtray, that I know about. They had a vacuum-powered ashtray. It would suck the ash off the end of your cigarette. You put it in the tray, and yeah. And a 12-volt electric razor, which, by the way, is probably a very rare option. I've only seen one, but it's kind of neat. But they had a 12-volt electric razor so you could shave on your way to work. So they created distracted driving 70 years ago. It's not anything new, right? Today it's texting. But, yeah, that was the – I've only seen one air-conditioned car, and I've only seen one electric Razor car, and not the same car. But if you find an air-conditioned 55 Chevy with factory air, I don't think they made – 800 cars with air conditioning. So do the math. They built 1.7 million cars. 800 had air. That was the number that I came up with. That it was like 8850. That's crazy. Air conditioning was $500. The car was $1,500. Air conditioning was $5. Who would spend a third the price of the car on air conditioning? Not a lot of people. So it's a mark on society. You watch. Watch what electric cars do to us. Paul in Warwick, New York. How are you today, sir? What can I do for you? Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, at your service.
How are you, sir?
Good. What's going on?
I had a question regarding motor oil. I read somewhere that synthetic blends are not regulated at all, so you never really know what kind of a mixture you're getting. True or false?
True. They're not regulated. So, and to tell you the truth, a lot of the way oils are made are not regulated. And the way they compromise or compose oil is this. Always read the back of the oil bottle. Does this oil meet manufacturer spec? So if you're driving a Ford, it's got to meet Ford spec. If you're driving a Chrysler, it's got to meet Chrysler spec. If you've got driving a GM, it's got to meet GM spec, and so on. Not all oils are the same. Not all synthetic blends are the same. Not everything I've read. I mean, personally, I don't know why anybody would use a synthetic blend unless the manufacturer specifically said it has to be a synthetic blend. Example, Ford tells us all the time that we have to use a motor oil that meets synthetic blend or above. Okay, for the extra dollar, right. For the extra dollar a quart or $1.50 a quart, whatever it is, I'll put synthetic in it. I can drive the car another 1,500 miles. It's a little bit longer time, and above all else, it's better protection. And you know that's the name of the game. You know, but I see the day conventional oil is getting harder to find now, and I see the day where conventional will disappear, and it's going to be synthetic blend. It's going to be synthetic blend and or synthetic, and I bet you in time synthetic goes away, and it's just going to synthetic blend goes away, and it'll just be synthetic. The next
more and more manufacturers provide full synthetics in their cars now. Am I right?
Correct. And now they're changing. Now they're changing viscosity. That's the next thing. Toyota has for the last couple of years had 0W16. You know, my wife had a sewing machine 30 years ago. We used to put real lightweight sewing machine oil on, and I think that's what this stuff is. I've seen it. I bought a couple of bottles and I poured them out and I poured it out compared to, and it's like water. It's scary how thin this stuff is.
I have one brief follow-up question. My son goes to school in Wisconsin. He brings a car with him, a Mini Cooper. His temperature down there, are minus 40 sometimes.
Oof.
He's got to use a real, real thin oil. I kind of insist on a zero, I think it's 020 or something like that when he's out there with that.
Right.
How damaging is it to an engine to trying to start a car like that in those temperatures? Because I ask them not to use it when it's that cold. But
is the oil rated for the car?
It's rated for the car, but minus 40 is a tough temperature.
Well, minus 40 is a tough temperature regardless, but if the oil's rated for the car, Paul, there's really not much you can do. If the manufacturer says 020 with this spec and this additive package in it will provide normal protection, you got to take them at their word. And there's really not much more you can do about it. But I will say this. Extreme temperatures push all kinds of cars, regardless of manufacturer, to the extreme. And you know, minus 40 is an extreme. And
I agree. I mean, I've been using synthetics for a long time. I use an AMSOIL product. Not many people have ever really heard of an AMSOIL. That's like late 70s technology. And that was so hard to come by because there were so many of them.
Right. I've heard of AMSOIL. We used to actually use, back in the day when we could get it, AMSOIL was the gear oil choice in the first hot rod because it provided such, yeah, it did. And, you know, the sad part was, I never understood AMSOIL as a company. I think it's good oil, but their distribution never grew or never, to my knowledge, it's hard to find. You've got to be a distributor or know a distributor. It's kind of like, what's that marketing company, Amway? You know, it's AMSOIL, Amway, you think it's from the same house. But, I appreciate the call, Paul. Good luck to you and your son out there, minus 40-degree weather. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're coming back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. We're on the end of the Car Doctor. A quick shout out and a note of thanks to the folks over at WTBQ in Warwick, New York, and WGHT Pompton. We Tom and I, Santa.
That was a hoot, wasn't it?
That was a hoot. Tom was doing his best Santa impersonation. We sent Tom in first Tuesday morning, Christmas Eve, and he sort of, it was a MasterCard moment as he walked in the door, and Frank looked and, gee, who the heck is this? And I walked in about 2 minutes later behind him. We presented Frank with a 3/8 gold-plated, 22-karat gold-plated ratchet, signifying he is the gold standard in radio in this area, and to express our thanks for his support over the years. And just had a good time. We sat there for the better part of 2.5 hours talking radio, and we got to talk to people from Warwick. And, you know, that's what radio is, right? Local radio.
I thought
radio.
Taylor was going to fall off her chair. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You know, you know what, Tom? But that's what radio is. It's not corporate. You know, a lot of what people hear on this show is really, well, here. So we talked to Paul Nebraska. I think those are gentlemen.
Owner of Nebraska Plumbing and Heating.
Plumbing and Heating up in Warwick. And he said to me, he said, So how much prep time do you do for the show? And I went, let's see. And Tom answered it. I thought Tom's answer was great.
Yeah, I thought it
was,
yeah, me too. I said he takes a 15-minute nap right before airtime. We wake him up and we throw him on the air.
And that's it. That's the prep. I mean, it's, you know, and he said, how can you do that? And I said, because I do this every day. And this is, you know, I'll think about things a little bit. I have something going on in my head. But, yeah, there is no prep. There's no script. There's nothing written down. It's just flying by the seat of your pants. And that's what makes radio. It's... I don't know. Maybe we should do it the other way. Maybe we'd be in 10,000 markets. So, but again, Happy New Year, and thanks to Frank and Taylor up there at TBQ and GHT. We appreciate it, and we love seeing you guys. Let's get over. Where are we going here? We're going to let's go to Sam in Illinois, 11 Toyota Avalon. Sam, where are we at with this Avalon? Refresh my memory. What was wrong with this?
Sure. I'm the original owner. It's got 60,000 on it. The front end of the car, or the bottom of the car, is shuttering. And at that time, you had told me that, you know, the age of the car and everything and the tires were original. So what I had done was I got them balanced and rotated, and then it was I rotated each one different areas of the wheel, axles and stuff. It didn't change the shutter at all.
Okay.
So then I got rid of the four tires, and I got brand new tires.
This was the Chinese tires or something, right? These were the cheaper tires that you
put on? These were original. These were original. Originally they put in Michelin's and Bridgestones, what is what they did, whichever assembly line it came off, I guess. But those were the two models that came in.
Gotcha.
And I was reading some forums about it, and they do have some problems with that, but there's no answer. They kept, you know, pointing to the axles, there was no codes, and as far as the right still, I still can't find anything to, you know, get, because one person changed the axle, the inner axle or something, and it got rid of the noise a little bit, and then it came back again.
Okay, let me ask. Go ahead.
Let me tell you this part. The shutter comes on at exactly 30 miles per hour.
I thought it was 37.
And,
is it 30 or 37?
Well, you're right. That's the second time. Yes, that's the second. Those are the two intervals. Correct. That's exactly right. And only on deceleration, on acceleration, I'm sorry. And I've tried that on deceleration. It doesn't do anything. Just, there's no, you know.
And if you're rolling along at 37 miles an hour and pop it into neutral, does the vibration go away?
Yeah, I haven't done that yet. I just didn't know what it would do, so I wanted to talk to you again.
Yeah, if we were at the shop, I would run you through everything that you've done, and then my next step would be, because I want to know, is it a vibration caused by the load of the engine and the drivetrain against the body? Does it go away? Is it speed related? Is it load related? What? So, yeah, you know, I want to be careful not to – let me just say this part. I want to be careful, obviously, not to pop it into reverse, because that makes for an exciting time. But,
right,
you know,
right,
37
right.
miles an hour, pop it into neutral and roll. If the vibration goes away, then I'm going to start to think, do I have an issue in the trans? Is this torque converter shutter? Is this a trans shutter? How many miles are on this car?
64.
Okay. Have you ever changed the trans fluid?
Yes.
Okay, how long?
I'm pretty good with maintenance.
How long ago?
Probably about at 45,000.
Okay. So have you looked at the color of the fluid? Does the fluid still look good?
The fluid was still good, yeah. And I used the original, the WS stuff, Curtis, all the time.
So what if you did
one
this?
Other thing,
go ahead. You tell me your story first. Go ahead.
The other thing was, when I do watch that speedometer, I noticed at certain times only, the RPM spikes. Little bit, you know, like for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe it's the actual RPM. I mean, it's the revolution that it goes up. But this, I see it spiking, though. It's like a quick, you know, it's not a smooth RPM. It's a spike, and then it comes down when that happens.
Okay, do this. Take it out. Make the vibration happen. 2 feet.
Yeah.
Just hold the... Just hold the gas steady at whatever speed, 30, 37, whichever one makes the vibration.
Okay.
Tap the brake pedal with your other foot.
Okay.
Does the vibration go away?
Okay.
If it does,
all right.
If it does, we've got a trans issue of some kind.
Oh.
Because, yeah, I'm sorry, because because the issue is when you hit the brake, you're releasing the overdrive or the lockup converter.
I see.
So
okay.
let's see what that does for us.
I see.
It's starting to sound more and more like a trans issue because it's at specific miles per hour. 30 and 37 are pretty consistent.
Yes.
Is it there?
Very specific. Exactly.
Is it there cold, Sam?
No, I notice whenever it's warmed up, it like when I say warmed up, within 5 minutes.
Okay.
It's warmed up and then it'll do it.
I bet if you watch this on a scan tool, on a scan tool from a cold start, I bet as long as the car is in open loop, look at feedback control. Look at fuel feedback control. I bet you as long as this is in open loop, the problem doesn't happen. And then as soon as it goes closed loop, the PCM will then lock up the converter. It doesn't apply converter until the vehicle's warmed up. And that also points me towards a trans issue.
So which part of the transmission? Just the torque converter or something else?
Well, then we got to get into the conversation. If it is the converter, and I would leave this up to the trans guy when he takes it apart. If it is the converter, what does he find inside the trans? Is there particulate throughout the trans? Is the converter coming apart? You know, transmissions work on hydraulic pressure and very, 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 very tiny passageways. So if there's matter throughout the trans, it could be an issue. Now, it's a conversation I would have with either a trans guy that's done 50 of them or the Toyota dealer that's done 50 of them, and they tell you, hey, we always put converters in and we never have an issue. Or, hey, we do converters and transes because we see this as a common failure. But something in the back of my head is reminding me that there's a converter issue with these. And I think it goes 50-50. I think it depends on which dealer you talk to. One dealer's putting converters in and the other dealer's doing converters and transes.
I see.
But I bet you
on the other hand, just leave it alone and keep driving it.
Well, and then it's surely gonna come apart. But now the only other thing you could do is Band-Aid in a bottle. Is get yourself down to a local, you know, if you got a local O'Reilly Auto Parts and they've got some torque converter shutter juice, you could try that.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Band-Aid in a bottle, but it's been known to happen.
Yeah, I'm not either.
You know, 60,000 miles. There's certain things I'll do and certain things I won't do, and that's just I'd rather know if the trans is coming apart. It's going to save more money in the long run.
Okay. Have you heard anything with the newer ones at all, similar like 2018, 19s?
No.
Anything?
Not this particular problem, no sir.
No, sir. That one. Okay.
All right.
Good, do those things.
I bet you that's it. You call me back, let me know. You're welcome, Sam. You take good care.
All right. Thank you.
Try and have a Happy New Year. How can you say Happy New Year to a guy? You just told him his car probably needs a transmission. And 3-4 grand. Happy New Year! Drink up, Shriners. Okay, Ron and Aiden, the car doctor, will be back right after this. Oh, yeah.
Here I come in my 57, she's a real rider.
Welcome back. Ron and Aiden, the car doctor. Let's get over and talk to Donald in Illinois, 02 Ford Ranger. Donald, welcome to the car doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've got a 2002 Ford Ranger XLT, a four-wheel drive, and the tires I have on it now is that 245/75R16s. And I noticed my spare was 235/75R15 is a 15-inch. Can I take them 16s off and buy the rims for 15-inch rims and put the 15-inch tires, or is there anything special I have to do?
Well, let's back up a second. What does the door placard say the tire size should be on the truck? Did you look at that?
I have not looked at that yet, to be honest with you. I went on Google and found out, and they said 235/15s.
Right.
But I have not looked on the door thing, which I should have did, and I forgot.
Because I'm thinking that the truck originally had 15s, and somebody else put 16s on it. You bought the truck secondhand?
Yeah, so yeah, secondhand. And that was what the deal is. I looked at the tires, and they needed some new tires. Was going to need some new tires, but I took the spare off to see what size it was and go through the process, and it was in real good shape.
Right.
But I noticed it was 235/75R15s, and I thought, well, I can't do that then because of different tire size. So I was going to, if it works out properly, I'm going to put the 15s back on there and sell the rims and stuff like that for the 16-inch rims and everything. And I could not think of anything right offhand that would prevent me from doing that, but I thought I'd give some advice from somebody else.
Right. And I appreciate that, brother. Basically, you're probably fine. My guess is it had 15s on it from the start because it has a 15-inch spare, and I bet you the door placard will also tell us and support that it had 15s from the get-go. Somebody put 16s on it. They probably didn't change anything. If they did, then you should be able to change it back by the same way, and that way would be using a Ford dealer-level scan tool, an IDS. If the ability to set, they call it module programming or module personality, to go in there and change tire size, if it's necessary. My guess is most people take the shortcut. I'm sure they just put the 16s on and didn't change anything. So do this. Get it out to the highway. Run it up to 60 miles an hour. Hit the stopwatch. Should go a minute. Mile marker to mile marker at 60. If it's off by a little bit, when you put the 15s on, repeat it. If now it goes within 2 seconds, mile marker to mile marker at 60, then you know 15s is what it was calibrated for all along, and you just corrected something. Chances are, and I'm gonna overreach here a little bit, chances are you're going to find that it doesn't make enough of a noticeable difference in terms of time, the 16 versus the 15. And you're going to be fine either way, and the truck won't really notice the difference. But I would.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, but I would check the door placard first to make sure. You know, what are the odds somebody changed the spare and put the wrong spare? Put the wrong spare in the truck.
And I didn't think too much about it when I bought the vehicle and stuff like this, and then I thought, well, I got to check that spare to make, and it was low on air and everything, which is right. No big deal. Because I got an air compressor for that, but then I noticed the size is 235/75R15 on the spare. Well, I can't put that on that truck with the 16s.
No.
So in other words, that was the dilemma I was in. I don't see nothing wrong.
I don't see anything wrong with what you're trying to do either. I think what we said is absolutely correct. And go change, put the 15s on after you run the test and repeat it, and I think you'll be fine. Happy New Year, kiddo. Good luck to you, Donald. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Let's go over to Frank in Delaware. Frank, we got about 2 minutes, brother. What's going on?
Hey, hello. Thanks,
yes, sir.
Ron.
Yes, sir.
For taking the call. I'm looking at a 2016 Z71 crew cab with 20,700 miles.
Okay.
I was just wondering, it's a Silverado. I'm wondering what your opinion is of that vehicle. I like it.
I like it too. Listen, I've been driving Chevy pickup trucks the last, started in 91. I've had a Chevy pickup since 91. I'll say it that way. I've had three of them. 91, a 2008, and the 2019. And I think they're all good trucks. I think Chevy gives a lot of bang for the buck. I would just be leery. Why so little miles, and why are they getting rid of it? It's my only question.
Yeah, it was a one owner.
Okay.
The Carfax is fine.
Right.
No other issues other than services.
Right.
Routine services, and it rides nice. It's more comfortable than my Traverse.
Right. Right.
That I had 2017 Traverse. I lost that in an accident 2.5 weeks ago. It
okay.
was totaled. So I didn't want to buy a new vehicle. She runs good. It's a V6.
Okay, coming from the Chevy dealer or coming from a private owner?
It's on the lot. It was one owner had
all right.
it, and I mean
clean. So do this, Frank. Here's a couple of tips. Look at the radio stations. What radio stations are selected? You know, if it's punk metal, heavy rock, you know, somebody driving it might have been a little bit more aggressive. If it's an AM talker, and maybe they were kind of docile and you know, sort of calm. Pull the dipstick out. How clean's the engine oil dipstick? Take a look around under the hood. That should have the original battery in it. It might be coming due for a battery. It's 4 going on 5 years old. Look at the brake pedal wear. Take a look under the truck. You want to pay particular attention to rust in and around the undercarriage and make sure that there's nothing excessive. But as a rule, good solid truck. You should do very well on that for years to come. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you all, Happy New Year. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.